It is the Friday show. It is the hardest Friday show to do with the season. It is anyway, often this one, because you're in a situation where there's a lot of games that don't matter last day. You know, there's always a number of them that, you know, that you can try and convince yourself, for instance, that Chelsea versus Watford has got something riding on it, but in reality it hasn't. But it's made harder this season because there's this raft of Thursday fixtures, which is still a knock-on effect from COVID, it's worth pointing out. I'm recording it before then, so we don't know at the moment what the result is of Burnley's game against Aston Villa and Everton's game against Crystal Palace. Chelsea's game against Leicester is one of them. That's a complete waste of everybody's fucking time, and nobody should even bother playing it at this stage of proceedings. Just give them 1.5 points each and save everyone's legs. But you do have to fulfil the fixtures. It's the way it works. So we don't know the result of Everton versus Palace, and we don't know the result of Villa versus Burnley, or even the team that Steven Gerrard picks for the game against Burnley, which obviously may have a knock-on effect for the game on Sunday. So what we're going to do is we're going to drill in, and we are going to start off. We've got Paul Dehaney, I've got Kev Walsh, and I've got Grace Maley all with me. We're going to focus in first and foremost on the top four battle, which is not particularly interfered with by anything going on here. Yes, if Everton get a win, they don't need to try at Arsenal, it's worth saying, but then Tottenham are just going to Norwich, so we're focusing on that first. Then we'll have Dave Mooney come in, and he'll do a bit on obviously on Manchester City, and then we'll talk about the final day in the title race, and then we'll hypothesise about around the relegation picture. We're not going to Crystal Palace versus Man United, I do not care. Who finishes sixth, I do not care. We're not indulging in that. So I've let you know what it's about. Now we're going to go over. It's Jordan Jarrett Bryan talking to John Gibbons about Arsenal.
And it's John Gibbons with Jordan Jarrett Bryan. And Jordan, it was all looking so good. It was all looking so rosy for Arsenal that they were going to get a top four place. So then what's happened, mate? Last couple of games fell away.
I think the reality, John, has kicked in. And the reality is that we have a squad that I think is a Europa League squad. I think the reality is that with the small squad that we have, which is through choice, by the way, Arteta decided to have a relatively small squad, that, you know, we're 3-4 games past what the limits of the squad, I think, is. It's just 3-4 games too much. The reality is that it's a predominantly young squad, an inexperienced the Premier League squad. And the reality is that we're probably round about where we should be. It would have been nice to come top four. You know, I'm not just saying this because we're going to miss out on top four, but I feel like even if it had got top four, we still would have been a Europa League team in terms of what this team is capable of doing. I think this current squad gets to the last four of the Europa League this season. Do you know what I mean? I know we got to the final under Emery, but I think there's a bit more togetherness about this squad, even if the quality may be slightly lessened. And that's the reality. You know, we are where we are. You know, obviously it hurts that it's Spurs that have pipped us. But I think we're on a trajectory under the tenure of Arteta. But I understand the fan base is upset and anger amongst a lot that this is an opportunity missed. And I think that we can't dress it up as an opportunity missed. We had a chance to accelerate the process by a whole year if we'd have kind of got into the Champions League this year, as opposed to what I think is what was the plan was next year. Mm. But the concern is that next year is going to be trickier. It's going to be harder to get top four, I think. So it's an opportunity missed for sure.
Yeah, football is often about taking chances when they arrive. And I think from Arsenal's point of view, you know, a few teams were looking like they were underperforming a little bit this year. I mean, obviously Manchester United, they were still way behind Arsenal. And for a period of the season, you know, Spurs. And so I guess it's more the way it's happened rather than the finish, rather than sort of, you know, the reality of fifth.
I think that's what it is, John. I think it's how it's happened. If we'd have been fifth in, I don't know, March, start of March, and we stayed fifth until now, Arsenal fans would take that and there wouldn't be any grumbling. But because it was in our hands to get more, I think that's what burns the most. But, you know, I'm not as angry about it as other Arsenal fans are. I mean, I was just on a podcast on an Arsenal fan channel earlier on today, and one of the other panellists made a really interesting point about the board, because the frustration is that January is why we're where we are now. Not recruiting in January and reinforcing January. I think that's one of the reasons. I don't think it's the reason. But the point was made that, did this board actually want to get top four? Or are they quite happy being in the Europa League where they can hide and they can always kind of have an excuse and a get out? If we've got Champions League football, we would have A, seen how good these players really are. Mm-hmm. B, we would have seen how good Arteta really is against the best managers in Europe at the highest level. And C, more importantly, I think amongst the fan base, the board would have had to have shown their hand about how serious they are in regards to backing this team. You can't be in the Champions League and not supply your manager and team with the resources needed to be at least competitive. Whereas in the Europa League, you can always have a get out of, yeah, we couldn't get the guys we wanted because they wanted Champions League football. Or, yeah, we wanted him, but it was maybe 30 grand out of our budget wage-wise. So that's the biggest disappointment for me. It's almost let the board off the hook. I'm not in this Arteta in-out nonsense. I get why some fans want him out. I get why some fans want to continue and see progress. But I think the biggest L, if you like, is that we're not going to have a chance to expose this board and see what their intent really is slash was.
You mentioned that, you know, do the Arsenal podcast before, and I'm sure since Monday night, there's been a bit of discussion about Granit Xhaka's comments after the game. Seems to have divided opinion a little bit. Some people saying, you know, it's great the players are honest on interviews. Other people saying, well, hang on, maybe, you know, you're not the best person to be saying this based on, you know, your performance in the game. What did you make of what Xhaka was saying? And do you think he was on dangerous ground, or do you think it was fair enough?
I think it's both. I don't think it's either or. I think it's both. It reminded me a little bit of a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years, when Tony Blair came out and was talking about the government's strategy for lockdown and protecting the vulnerable and what we need to do. And he was, in my opinion, saying all the right things. The message was right. The messenger was wrong, because the credibility amongst Tony Blair, amongst a lot of people, is in the gutter. So it reminded me a little bit of that. A, first of all, it's important to remember that, and I'm a journalist, he would have been asked a question.
Yeah,
it didn't just come from nowhere. He would have been asked a question. He gave an answer. Second of all, yes, I think what he said was right. They bottled it, this phrase. They froze. They weren't up for it. They weren't good enough. They weren't ready for it. They just weren't the team and the individual they needed to be to get that job done. But also, it's a case of, all right, mate, Arsenal where they are in terms of the last 3 or 4 years, largely down to people like you. Now, I haven't bought into the couple of purple patches that he's had this season, where he has been good. In the main, he has been a decent player for this team. But if you look at his Arsenal tenure overall, he's been a huge part of why we failed. And as the most, I think he's the most senior player in the team. I think it was a little bit harsh, him digging out the team the way that he did, considering he's arguably the chief culprit as to why we are where we are. That young team has carried Arsenal to get into, you know, where we are, to be in a position to get fourth. What the young players who have faded in this last month, Saka, I don't think he's fit. Emil Smith-Rowe's not been fit for 3 months. Martinelli has been hot and cold. Ramsdale, I think we've seen his youth and experience at this level. A club like Arsenal, you know, I've seen glimmers of the frailties there. But they've got us where we are now. Now they're saying, all right, Lacazette, Xhaka, you guys, get us over the line. And they failed. They failed. So it is a little bit rich coming from him, considering that he's one of the chief culprits as to why we failed. But equally, we do like honesty. We do want honesty. He was asked a question. He gave an answer. And what he said technically was factually correct.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. And as you say, both sides here can have a point sometimes. So on to the weekend then. You guys, you know, got a tricky-ish game against Everton. Well, we'll see. We're recording this ahead of Thursday night, so Everton might have won and are safe. And I guess that makes it a little bit easier. The problem is, obviously, is that, you know, Spurs have got Norwich City, who tend to sort of whipping boys, really. Do you have any hope of Norwich doing you a favour? I mean, it's a long time since they won, but they only need a draw. They drew last time out against Wolves.
No, they need to win. Spurs only need to draw.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry for you guys.
Sorry. Yes. I think Spurs will pump them. I think Spurs are in the groove. I think they're in form. I think Son wants the golden boot from your boy.
Yeah.
I think Kane wants to finish the season strong. And I think more importantly than all of those things, it's a Conte team. I don't think Conte will let this go. I'd have a lot more hope if it was a case of Spurs have to win to secure the top four. The mere fact they need a draw, and then people are saying to me, yeah, it's football. If they get a player sent off in the first 10 minutes, you never know. I think even with 10 men, Spurs win. I think 10 men, Spurs beat Norwich. However, Having said all of that, John, all of that, there is one team that can balls this up. If there is one team that can, I mean, let's have it straight. If Spurs lost this game, it would be the biggest shock in football. It would be. I mean, something with Leicester City, I'd put it ahead. Spurs don't even need to play well, and they probably win, let alone get a draw. So if there's one team that can balls this up, it's Spurs. But no, I think Spurs are in the groove. I think they see, they sense that the finish line is there. They've got to go through it. I'm not even convinced, and this is really grim, John, I'm not even convinced that we win. You know, especially if Everton need to win. I think that we psychologically and physically, I think we've gone, John. I think the Spurs game, the Newcastle game, I think we saw, yeah, this is three or four games too many. But my biggest concern isn't even, can Norwich do us a favour? I'm not even sure that we even win. So for me, it's a bit of a so what. If Spurs, you know, don't win the game or, you know, get lose, then happy days and we can get me on next week and I'll be bouncing if we win our game. But I think we need almost two miracles to happen. And one miracle is something that is unlikely, but two, I don't know. I'm not convinced we beat Everton. So, and then to not be a hypocrite and kind of go back and watch it initially, even if we were to get top four, I'll take it. But I wouldn't have any confidence that we are good enough to really do anything of note in the Champions League next season. So let's see how the weekend goes. But it's very much everybody needs to have a break, have a holiday. The season starts very early because of the World Cup. Let's get some players in nice and early and then prepare for the new season.
There we are. We'll see what happens at the weekend, obviously. But thanks a lot to Jordan. Do give him a follow on Twitter. He's at @JordanJBryan if you want to follow him on there. But Tom and Jordan, we'll see how it goes.
Welcome back. And now we've got Paul Dehaney talking to me about Tottenham Hotspur. Paul, they've done it, I think.
Don't do that. You never start the conversation.
He's done that on purpose. Look at his face.
Yeah. I'm delighted with this turn of events.
When Carragher and Neville were doing it on Monday night, I was like, oh, what are you doing? They was literally saying it was a fait accompli. It's done.
I heard a thing the other day, because I was exactly the same. And there was someone on the radio or whatever, and he was saying there was a scenario a few years ago where you could have gone into the Champions League and got beat 5-1.
Let me tell you that story quickly. Newcastle, last game of the season. It was a year that we supposedly blew the title that we was actually never in front. But I digress. Gets to the last game of the season to finish above Arsenal in second place. We just needed to win at Newcastle. Newcastle were already relegated. We lost 5-1 and we were terrible. So nobody tell me after that mental scarring session that it's going to be that easy. I would say I'm a lot more confident that because the draws come into play now. We you know, a bit like yourselves, isn't it? That if they draw, you can still win the title, can't you? It's the same with us in a kind of roundabout way. So that gives me a
draw
bit.
Means that even if Arsenal won, for instance, the goal difference is 15. So
if there's a team, it could be 15-0, long boys.
Let's be honest, even then, you wouldn't have thought you could turn it around and get 15 against from an Arsenal point of view. So a draw is a good result. You go to Carrow Road, you kick off. Yeah. If they blew the final whistle there, and then it'd be done.
Yeah, yeah. That's a better feeling. I don't think they will take that attitude. I think they'll try and get an early goal and try and put it to bed as early as possible, because the longer it stays at 0-0 is the longer anyone can score from a penalty or an own goal.
So just on that, I'll bring Kev and Grace in on this. When a draw is a good result, and this is a key thing, is that if you score one, it's like you've gone 2-0 up. And I think that grace is what's massively in Tottenham's favour against Arsenal here, is that they score one, they will be able to play with the freedom of a team who are 2-0 up. Two bad things have to happen. Two unlucky things have to happen for the worst to happen. And I think that always liberates a side.
Yeah, I've said that all season. Like, getting an early goal can really see a lift in your side. I've been like that for us all season. I don't want us to come out and think, oh, like, we've already done this, whatever, in whatever game we're in, and just sit back. Like, you want an early goal because then your momentum picks up, doesn't it? I think for Spurs, they've really like found their feet later on this season. Like, Harry Kane is in my fantasy. I was second in my league. I'm in a league with my mum and dad. I'm now top. He's been my captain for the past like 2 months, and he's found his feet. At the start of the season, he wasn't scoring that many, and now he's just come into it. I think Spurs have done it. I think Arsenal, Arteta, just he's done well with them, but the players that they've got, are just, they don't look like they want to be there. They're just all over the show. So I think don't know. I reckon Spurs have done it.
I think they've got... I mean, you'll never get a better opportunity, Kev. And it's also vindicated the managerial decision they made. They went early, they got Conte in. He was a fair bit off the pace, but it was worth pointing out that Manchester United are a shambles and were a shambles. Arsenal were organising themselves as they were going. The top three were the top three. And, you know, I think not even West Ham themselves truly believed at any point it was possible, especially with the Europa League exertions that they had to. But you can only do what's in front of you, and you could not ask any more than already relegated 20th in the last game of the season, home or away, you know what I mean? You couldn't ask any more, I don't think.
You couldn't, but obviously the whole Spurs thing, as Paul's already said there, it's nervous, isn't it? It's easy, I think it's easy to say, like, they'll just absolutely smash them. And obviously, the odds will suggest that that'll be the case as well. Whatever odds they'll be, I'd be, I'd imagine, mad odds on. But it's about the pressure on a situation like that, isn't it? And Tottenham have got big players, but not necessarily players used to playing in big situations, which is a bit mad to say when all you've got to do is draw with 20th place Norwich. But that's where they can come in. Personally, I do think it's done. I think he's absolutely walked it. But I think for Arsenal, it's a bit of a nightmare because of the situation they found themselves in, where it was theirs, it was in their hands, and they probably deserved it as well. He played some really good stuff, but they were a year ahead anyway. And I think they've got like a clear direction they're travelling in. With Spurs, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, Paul, it just feels like a little bit more, we need to do everything now because Conte's mad and he might just walk away after three games next season and we don't know where we'll land up then. Obviously, if you're in the Champions League, that puts you in a much stronger position then, doesn't it? But it just feels like Tottenham are like a little bit more up, down, up, down, up, down, whereas Arsenal feel like they're on more of an upward trajectory overall, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the last time I was in it, I did predict that Arsenal would fall short because of the injuries and because of the lack of goals and the inexperience with young players. And I think that's kind of all come, it's unravelled in the last two games, particularly against Spurs and Newcastle. You saw they were visibly not at it against Newcastle. They looked nervous. They didn't kind of know what was going on. And you never really saw, and never at one minute thought they were going to win that game, which
even in the tunnel, they didn't write they were going to do it. They just didn't have the belief in themselves.
And you know why I'm saying that? It's not as a critical Tottenham fan on Arsenal. It's because I've been there as with Spurs. That same season we were talking about, that Leicester season, there were so many opportunities for us to get close to Leicester. But that, as soon as the pressure was on and said, right, if you win this, it was almost like, oh, what do we do now? And they got a bit shook. But, you know, I know you said that I think the experience has actually got us to where we were. I think that game against Burnley,
yep,
that 1-0, that was a typical kind of Conte performance. Like, I saw, like, lines of players where they should be, and it was almost like thou shall not pass, you know, and we get this result. The same against Arsenal, it's like by hook or by crook we're getting this result, and you saw like an intensity that I haven't seen, and it seems to have come just at the right time. And unfortunately for Arsenal, what's happened to them has come at the same time as Spurs have had that upset.
Newcastle were all over Arsenal.
I mean, you look at the points, right? I think it was in March, we were 6 points behind them and they had a game in hand. So effectively, there could have been 9 points in front of us. So to turn that round to... In fact, in a week, we went from 4 points behind to two points in front. So yeah, I know it sounds crazy that I feel nervous now. I actually was more confident when we were behind. And I just feel that it would be a lovely to put some, put an end to that kind of Spursy tag and, you know, shut people up for once, you know.
The players will do it. Obviously, there's the ones who grab the attention, always the forwards, because they're excellent. There's no shadow of a doubt on that. How's Bentancur been?
He's been quietly steady. And I think what's the best thing I've noticed about him is that the complement between himself and Højbjerg. We never really had that balance. I think I've always moaned about having two kind of defensive-minded players that do exactly the same job. So there's no one actually playing through balls. Little, he's got the nastiness to his game, can get his foot stuck in, but he also plays forward through balls and passes, which has added to the another dimension to our team.
And the other one is, it feels as though, for instance, really good contribution, obviously, at Anfield. Sessegnon seems to have found his way with Conte in a way that could be long-term useful for Conte. I think that I'd expect him to invest in wing-backs possibly in the summer, but Sessegnon looks as though he could be a viable proposition for him there.
You've seen a change in his demeanour. He's gone from being someone who's being so careful with every pass and doesn't really want to make a mistake to all of a sudden thinking, right, I'm going to start taking people on.
Back to the same kid he was at Fulham.
Yes, exactly. I'm seeing that potential and I'm really glad they stuck with it because I didn't want it to be an almost like another Kyle Walker-Peters situation because Kyle Walker-Peters was playing exactly the same way as Sessegnon was, that nervous kind of way under Mourinho. Mourinho got shot of him and I always knew there was a player in Kyle Walker-Peters and, you know, he's kind of proving that now. So sometimes you've got, we're quick to dismiss younger players because they're not, they haven't got a famous name, but, you know, other players will keep them for a season or two until they come good. So, you know, I'm glad to see that.
I think Sessegnon's definitely a player. He's got all the attributes. He's dead technical. He's fast as well, isn't he? Mm. At Fulham, obviously, he was brilliant. And then he's gone to Tottenham. And maybe you're thinking, oh, has the big club overawed him slightly? But maybe it's just the fact that he's had
numerous injuries as well. a word for Ben Davis as well. He's almost like been the way that Aspilicueta became Conte's man under Chelsea and started almost like he looked like he was finished, but all of a sudden he just found a place for him in the team. He's not a left back, he hasn't got the pace, but he just seems to slot into that three. I mean, he will be kind of the one of the ones that will probably get a replacement, an upgrade in the summer, but you know, he's done a fantastic job in that time.
They're gonna do it, Tottenham, yeah,
I think they are,
yeah.
Come on, man. Come on, man. I'm
such
begging
a Spurs fans answer that.
I'm begging you. It's Norwich away. Come on, you've got 2 points. The Blues might beat them. Come on.
Whoa. Let's not get crazy.
Hey, we've all had a pint.
What's the goal difference?
Oh, you're 15 in your favour.
Oh, if that got... Paul, if that goes please, the right way, mate, fuck it.
Please don't let me regret this, but yes, Spurs are going to do it.
Spurs are going to do it. Excellent stuff. Are Liverpool going to do it up against Aston Villa at the weekend? So no, we're not. Sorry, Aston Villa are on our side. They're the goodies. Wolves and Manchester City, they're the baddies. Let's keep them in order and work that out on Manchester City being the baddies. Here's the very good indeed, David Mooney.
With David Mooney, who I saw last Friday, you'll find out why at a later date. But I saw him last Friday and he said to me, I'm really worried about West Ham. I said, I'm sure if you just get through patches of the game and all that sort of stuff. I said that he said, no, I'm really worried. And I said, well, Jared Bowen is a good player. And he was the danger man. And David, that's how it transpired. City started poorly, but the one thing you have to say, even we have to doff our caps to, is they put in one hell of a second half to get it back to 2-2.
They did. And I had all but chucked in the towel on it being a points thing. I was thinking, right, it's goal difference now at half time, purely because there's one or two rumblings of it starting now, but generally in my entire lifetime I don't remember too many games where City in terms of a performance start badly and get better. They start well and get worse. They start mediocre and kind of get through it and finish mediocre and win the game sort of thing. But there's not many occasions where I can think of. And I'm not talking about where City concede the first goal and then go on and win the game. That's a fairly common thing in football, let alone who you are. But it's when they're playing badly and it looks like they're having a collective off day. There's not many occasions and not many examples of City turning it around and coming out for the second half a completely changed team and putting in a better performance. But that said, I mean, they still had the moments in the second half where they were trying to just capitulate at the back. They were shaky at times, and I think to get out of it, one missed penalty away from having turned it around to get 3 points. I'd have bitten your hand off for a point at half time, so you can't really complain that you know you've not converted the spot kick and got the three. It was a huge relief to get out of that game alive.
It's a game where, just to sort of dwell on it a little bit longer, West Ham do have a lot of the things that not just City don't like, Liverpool don't like, you know, a lot of the direct running, the quality. What for me, one of the key things when I look at a side against Liverpool or City is, are the players here who could, three or four, say, who could right now be good enough to play for City or Liverpool, once have been good enough to play for City or Liverpool, or in the future be good enough to play for City or Liverpool. If that's the case, then they've got a chance. And Bowen, falls into that category. Rice falls into that category. Yeah. In a really weird way, Mikel Antonio actually falls into that category in the sense of the fact that if he'd have gone on a different path at some point in his career, that might have gone a little bit differently for him as well.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at that, even Suchek to a degree, you could imagine him doing something for sides able to get Liverpool and City's points totally, and if he wouldn't do it that way. And that's where you are left all of a sudden when you are trying to play a lot of 1v1 football, which Liverpool and City do. Part of the reason why Liverpool and City do it is because they often think, well, we've got the better one in the 1v1.
Yeah, exactly.
And then suddenly you play Bowen or you play Rice, and that one is as good as your one, and suddenly you've got a world of difficulty.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's, you look at the goals that West Ham scored in that first half. Like, City had a lot of the ball, and West Ham kind of, they set up to go, we know we're not going to have a lot of the ball, but when we get the ball, we've got to use it. And both of their goals, the two opening goals, were really well executed moves. It was a case of City could have done this or that better, but it wasn't a case of, oh, there's been a mistake, let's exploit it. It was a case of, let's force the mistake and get something out of them. And that's what they did. And that's, I mean, when we were speaking to you on Friday, that was what I was worried about. I watched City go out of the cup at West Ham and thought, this is a team that, you know, could go on to achieve things this season. I suspect they would be higher in the table had they not got as far as they did in Europe.
Yeah.
And that really, really worried me. And I was like the, if you were going into a last two games of the season scenario, and you were able to hand pick the opposition you wanted, there's not a chance. You had to have one away, one at home. There's not a chance I would have picked West Ham away as one of the two games. So yeah, I was pleased to get out of it and pleased to kind of turn it around, and also pleased that the Fernandinho's ability to knock a back pass 30 yards too short didn't cost them, and that, you know, Laporte and Edison deciding to have a bit of a mix-up, and Zinchenko for whatever reason decided, I'll just pop this back into the danger zone, that didn't cost them either, because there was still opportunities for City to have lost it after they'd drawn it level.
There's a lot of injury questions at the back there still.
Yeah.
Will they still be present on Sunday? Because that, you know, there is a vulnerability, but I think also I'm looking at Laporte and he's not 100% fit by any stretch of the imagination there against West Ham. Yeah. Fernandinho is 36. Is the expectation it will have to be a very, very similar side against West Ham United?
It will at the back. They can change it at the front as much as they want. They've got no fitness worries in the forward players. At the back, you know, Diaz is out for the season now. Stones is out for the season. There is a little bit of talk that Walker will be fit for this. I think he said himself that he's feeling a lot better and he's hoping to be fit. I mean, it's the last game of the season. If Kyle Walker's at 60% and you can get an hour out of him, I'd do that, because he changes the way City play. Other than that, you're looking at Fernandinho again. You're looking at, I mean, Ake has not featured against Wolves and West Ham, but has been on the bench for both games. And you kind of go, well, if he was fit and he was fit enough to do something, then he'd have come on. So maybe he wasn't fit enough to do something, but he might be fit enough for the final game. And so Guardiola's gone, I'm not going to gamble with him. And I'm going to, he's there if we need him. But if we don't desperately need him, I want him for 90 minutes against Aston Villa, sort of thing. So maybe he'll be able to come in. I think the absolute dream scenario for City fans would be to see that Walker's got something in the legs to be able to come back and play. You can move Cancelo over to the left-hand side and take Zinchenko out, because Zinchenko had a difficult afternoon against West Ham, and that you can bring Ake and Laporte in as your centre-backs. That would be the dream at the minute. How close we are able to get to that, I'm really not sure.
Rodri features again against West Ham. All the way through the season, I've been impressed with him. It's interesting that the manager hasn't moved him. Instead, I think that's smart. Instead, he's backed him in the position to be part of what manages to hold sides at bay. He's so important to the City side. He's been the unsung hero, I think, over the course of the campaign.
Player of the season for me, you know. As much as Cancelo gets the plaudits, and as good as Bernardo's been and Mahrez as top scorer, without Rodri, none of this happens. City are not anywhere near where they are.
Even above De Bruyne.
De Bruyne, it's hard to pick De Bruyne as player of the season, because his season didn't really start until December time. He had a difficult start to the season. He was coming back from injury, and then He had that game at Anfield where he basically did everything good that City did, but didn't play very well. And it was really kind of a strange juxtaposition. And then I think it was after that he got COVID. And then it was another kind of couple of weeks before he was back into the swing of things again. Second half of the season, he's dragged City through and he's really starting to... weekend wasn't his best performance, but in the kind of weeks before that, he's been really good. But I think Rodri is a consistent all season long, has been the one that you can rely on. And yeah, for me, he's City's player of the season. It's not an easy decision by any stretch, but I think I think Rodri does not get the credit he deserves for the season that City have had.
When then, you know, looking at this one, it's gone for the last day before between Liverpool and City. It's infamously gone for the last day for City. Are you expecting anything out of the ordinary? Because I'm not, I don't think. But are you expecting anything other than a pretty regulation Manchester City win?
It's hard to say, isn't it? It really is hard to say. I think I'd be disappointed if City made a meal of it, given... Like I was saying before, if you could handpick opponents, even with the Steven Gerrard factor as Liverpool legend and Villa boss,
yeah,
and the narrative that brings with it, you kind of... If you were going to handpick an opposition, Aston Villa is probably one of those you would pick for the final home game, because you don't want somebody who's scrapping to stay in the league. The absolute ideal pick would be Watford, because City stick 9 past them every time they play them. So it's
they're already down,
yeah. But if you can't have Norwich or Watford, you would want somebody who is in mid-table, who can't go any lower. I think they can't finish any lower than 14th. They can't finish any higher than 9th. So you would pick somebody who is in that bracket, because they're in the sort of mold of, well, we're just enjoying our football right now and we see what happens. And those sorts of teams might be a little bit more open and a little bit more kind of happy to play than teams that are scrapping for every point. You don't want somebody who's scrapping for something to get into Europe. You certainly don't want somebody who's scrapping to get into the top four. You don't want your title rivals, because that's the worst of any situation. I don't think anybody's heart could handle that. And you don't want anyone who's scrapping to stay in the league. So you pick, I can't think of anybody who I would pick better than Aston Villa, because Crystal Palace and Southampton have given City a real tough time this season. So I wouldn't want to face one of them two either. So all of that kind of logically builds into the idea that City should have quite a comfortable afternoon. The flip side of it all is, you know, there is the defensive injuries that we've talked about. There is I'm always cautious of talking about the narrative, because I wonder if we make more of that than players. And
yeah,
there's as much as the narrative of Gerrard winning the league, of Gerrard helping Liverpool win the league, there's also Grealish against his former club sort of thing. So like there's too much to kind of go on. And I think all that happens is we just complicate it by talking about that. So there is that. And I just think, It should be a comfortable afternoon, but then again, it should have been a comfortable afternoon against Queen's Park Rangers in 2012, and it wasn't. It was comfortable against West Ham in 2014. It took City a little bit of time to get the breakthrough, but when they did, it was they were comfortable with it. Brighton, you know, would have been a lot worse on the final day in 2019 had they not equalised pretty much straight away after they'd gone behind. I don't know. It could be a Brighton style game. It could be a game like Leicester in that running where it took a company thunderbolt and, you know, 70 minutes of real edginess to get there. Or it could be a QPR sort of scenario where you're losing going into the final few minutes, needing two goals, and everyone's tearing the hair out. And it's just like I wouldn't put any of it past City. The only thing I really, really hope is that if City don't win the title this weekend, it's not because they've spent the entire 90 minutes against Aston Villa missing chance after chance after chance. Because then all that comes back round to is, should have signed a striker last summer, when it's like, they've literally gone out and solved that problem already. That isn't going to be a problem for them next season. So can we stop talking about it, please?
Yeah. Oh, very, very fair enough. Just very quickly, you think they go now, don't you? I think they go now. City will win.
Yeah, I mean, logic says they have to. You have to say that. There is a chance they don't. But there is a much greater chance that they do. It just depends which reality we're living in, which one of these, which of the multiverse, which reality we are going to find out we are playing out at the moment. Because if there's an infinite number of universes out there with an infinite number of possibilities playing out, City will lose the title this weekend as well as win the title this weekend. And we're going to find out which one of those we're living in.
Great stuff from David. How nervous are you? You're a very nervous person, I suspect. Well, you just described everything you did during the FA Cup final. Wasn't the behaviour of the same national human.
No, on Saturday I was in work, which is, I'm never watching a final in work again, and I had false nails on and I picked them all off during extra time penalties, and I just hid behind my computer screen, and I was just an absolute mess. And it was more, I think it was worse than being there. I think I was more stressed than being there because I knew that I couldn't even shout or do, because I'm in a soundproof room and no one's gonna, it doesn't make a difference. About the weekend, I am nervous only because I didn't think we'd even have a chance at this point. I think it would, like, I had a feeling Leeds won it the other night when I saw us go a goal down to Southampton. I was thinking, it's one of them, isn't it? Where you just think we've got this one and we haven't quite. I am now trying to see the league as a bonus. Because I think if I see it as that, then hopefully I'll be more at peace with Sunday's outcome, regardless.
I'm all in, me. Honestly, I'm fully convinced. I think we're going to win it. Just everything I like look at, everything I think about, I think about it a lot, it just points to that direction, doesn't it? Guardiola's had his moments where he should have just kept his mouth shut and just won the league. And if he'd done that, fine. But he chose to come out with that mad
He's obsessed with us. Absolutely obsessed with us.
He come out with the thing saying, people are going on about being 14 points behind, but they weren't. They had two games in hand. And then everybody wants Liverpool to win the league. And just like, none of that should have mattered to a team like them. He should have just gone out and done what he needs to do and no problems. Also, the Steven Gerrard slip song has fucking definitely ran its course. I'm fed up with that. So if Gerrard can do us a favour at the weekend, and listen, I'm a football romantic, really, but that's what you're supposed to be, do you know what I mean? That's why you go to the match, isn't it? I can't, honestly, the whole day on Sunday, I just cannot wait for it. We're starting off early, we're going to be in the ground, it's 4 o'clock kickoff, by the time it finishes, there's got to be a twist and a turn, because I know, listen, we're called the Devil's Club by Evertonians for a good reason, because we've had a lot of luck, and a lot, listen, the hard work, the luck you get, but the last day of the season, Premier League style look, or even league title style look, going back to 1989, has never really been it. That's never worked out in our favour. And with the type of club that, so one day we're going to get one of them. So why not this Sunday?
Why not this Sunday?
Why not? Why not? Indeed, I've kind of, my son's, as I allude to a lot, is an avid Liverpool fan, and like, he's going through it at the moment, and asking me, "Are we going to do it? Are we going to do it?" And you know, I always say this to everyone, and it sounds boring. This is the Premier League, man. There's nothing certain in the Premier League, and especially under pressure. Pressure breeds different things. And, you know, we're talking about high-level international footballers, but we see it when people miss penalties, and you look back on penalties. I never argue when someone misses a penalty, but if you look back over history, most of the best players have missed penalties in the big games, because most of the time they're taking the big penalty. Let's have it right. So pressure gets to everybody, and you know, no matter who you are. So I think that's you always have to throw that into the mix, no matter who's playing.
It's all about them, Paul, the pressure mountain, because the thing that City have shown themselves historically to be really, really good at is racing into a lead, especially at home, and especially against sides that are in the bottom half. And that's where, you know, for me, I'll be in the Kev Walsh camp if I get to 65 minutes and it's 0-0. I actually wouldn't be too averse to being in the Kev Walsh camp if I get to 82 minutes and it's Manchester City 1, Aston Villa 0.
100%.
The idea of pressure building, of scoreboard pressure, of things not quite going where you need them to go, I think all of that's what Liverpool will need. The concern is that we're all finding out on 33 minutes it's Manchester City 3, Aston Villa 0, because they're that good, and they've also got form for that sort of thing. It's how Villa stopped that from happening that I think will be almost the defining factor of the whole of the title picture on Sunday.
To give yourselves any hope, as have Villa got any form of you know, locking anybody out or...
Well, they done very well against us.
They did all right against us. We won the game 2-1, but the second comes in the second half. They did all right when they came to Anfield. That was only a 1-0 as it wore on that one as well earlier in the season. How did they get on in the return fixture?
They beat us 7-2 last year as well. I know that was a fucking crazy season, but they beat us 7-2.
In the return fixture, it was Aston Villa 1, Manchester City 2. It's all about, isn't it, Paul, the game still being live with view to an equaliser would tend to go one way or the other.
I think the fact that everybody playing at the same time puts another dimension onto it as well.
It's way more exciting than
yeah.
And that's why they do it, because if it comes down to the last day, it's completely what you want. It's like for a neutral as well, a battle for the title on the last day.
And I think
day.
They have to, you know, it has to be fair to everyone so everybody knows what they have to do, and you're not given any advantage over any other team, even though they do that in every other game of the season through TV schedules, but that's another matter. But, you know, I do have to look at the other side and
no, you don't, Paul.
I do, you know, I'm not going to be Liverpool biased here, even though I really, really want you guys to win. And why I really, really want you to win is because I don't want the thing that we haven't mentioned yet, the Liverpool 1, Tottenham 1 game, to be the reason why, you know, you almost like, but it won't be for that, because there's other reasons as well. But, you know.
You play good sides, that sort of stuff happens. Manager Grace is in a bit of a funny position. He's shown, I think, that he's prepared to... He's going to put fitness ahead of every other concern all the way through the season, but I think he very much makes that clear on Tuesday night. You expecting that to continue for this one? You know, there's a few players could maybe even do with some rhythm. I think a couple come back in. I thought both fullbacks come back in. They'll have had a week off, and it's 6 days until the Champions League final. What are you expecting Liverpool to do?
I think you've got to go full strength. You've got to, because you're still in with a chance on the last day of the season. You'd be stupid not to. There's a bigger gap between Sunday and the Champions League final than there has been between half of our games this season. So he's got to go full strength. I think, is Virg back? Yeah, on the edge.
Verge is on the verge, yeah.
Have you guys actually got a full strength, though? I mean, like...
Verge is in it. One or two, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, if... I used to think that if Virgil didn't play, it would be a problem, but now I think if Matip played with Konate or one other, I wouldn't worry at all, like, in terms of... I know you're really at home.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Wolves are home. They're not famed for their attacking prowess, really. Obviously, anybody can score a goal at any time, but they're not someone you're going to be thinking, when they break, it will be a case of if they break type of thing.
And I put them into one of the categories of teams that you'd probably want to play as well, like almost like really not much to play for.
Not been in great nick for some time. I mean, calendar year, they've not been in great nick. I think on it, Kev, I think we'll see the difference between the ones he's rested and the ones who had genuine injury concerns. So I think both fullbacks come back in from a Liverpool point of view. I think from there, you probably see Keita and Thiago both come back in, I would have thought, and Henderson from the outset, probably. He might have a little thing where he maybe didn't want Jordan to have to do 45 midweek, so he might be thinking about that. And then up top, I think Mane and Diaz are rests.
Well, Mane was rested, wasn't he? Because he said in midweek, he was like Trent and Mane in his post-match. He said Trent and Mane wanted to play. They feel great. But I just said, no, not today.
So I think I think the rested players you'll see come back. I think he won't risk, if there's any doubt at all, I don't think he risks Van Dijk, Salah, or certainly not Fabinho, but Van Dijk or Salah either.
No, definitely. But without, as Paul said, that Wolves are home on the last day of the season. You'd fancy us to do that. And what my concern with Wolves at home, like for ages, since it's been sort of coming to the point, has been that they can defend and they can sit and hold. But then City just absolutely blasted them. But that was just a masterclass off Kevin De Bruyne. So they could quite conceivably just sit in and make it really difficult for us to break them down.
They haven't been as tight recently.
That's what I mean. But but they've still got it in the bag. I think with Van Dijk, if he's fit, he'll play, but only if he's like 100% fit. If there's any issue, we don't need to. We can do. Can I say massive? There's no body.
I think most of the players that were rested, it was more to do with muscular recovery because playing that long, and then you're risking it playing so soon, and then sort of pulling something, aren't you? So I think that I was shocked though at the mat. Was it 9 changes?
I wasn't. You know, I thought it was going to be a bit of a mad team because he's probably thinking like, sometimes they're shite. We'll battle him. And to be fair, we made it. Yeah. They got that one goal, which was a total deflection. You know what I mean? So I fancy us with or without Salah, but I think the rhythm thing, which sounds a bit mad to say after a 7,000 game season or whatever it is that we've played, but to not play a game for a fortnight before a big final. I think we've seen when we played you guys.
Wasn't it three weeks?
3 weeks or something like that. Horrible. And it was, well, it was a scatty, like,
horrible for both teams. Game.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think he wants Mo Salah if he can help it to have been out for 2 weeks prior to that.
Who's going to win the league?
Us, hopefully.
Yeah, Liverpool. 100%.
100%. 100%. Who's going to win the league? You can say Manchester City.
I'll just say hopefully Liverpool.
Yeah, it's fine. it's all right if Manchester City win the league. You can't do much more.
You've been saying Liverpool are going to win the league all along, though, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, but you're you shit out on the FA Cup final, though, didn't you?
I did. Until that FA Cup final started, I didn't think we almost like, you know what I mean? I didn't think we were going to win it. And then it started and I went, oh, we're obviously going to win this. What do you think? You're a fucking idiot. It was genuinely, literally it kicks off and after about 5 minutes, I was thinking, we're going to walk this. And in the end, it didn't go that way. But yeah, no, I was always concerned about the FA Cup final.
It was as comfortable a penalty win as you'll find, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I was always concerned about the FA Cup final. I've always thought we'll find a way to do this. See how I feel 5 minutes in on this one. I think Liverpool will win the game. And that's as long as they win the game and then the other stuff you can't control, but I think Liverpool will win the game. I think they'll have set themselves a target to break 90 points. So I think genuinely that's what will be going on within the club. You break 90 points, that's what we do now, that's the team and I think they break 90 points and then City have got to do their bit. All right, then we're moving into the relegation picture. It is difficult. Burnley play this evening before we record this. There's no way we can record this tomorrow. We're off to Oslo. And Everton are playing up against Crystal Palace this evening. It's, Paul, ultimately it feels to me, Everton have got two games, Burnley have got two games. Burnley do need to put at least 1 point on the board. 1 point puts them level with Leeds United. For me, the defining factor is how bad are Leeds? That's almost the key question here. If Leeds can get a win, and they need to win last day, they need to go and beat Brentford. If they can beat Brentford, they can finish above Everton. If they can finish above Everton, they're guaranteed to stay up. If they can get 1 point, it means that Burnley would need to have won one of the two games in order for them to escape. And if they can get a point against Brentford, that might prove to be enough versus Burnley. But if Burnley just win tonight against Aston Villa, obviously at the time of recording, then Leeds are finding themselves in a situation that is must win. For me, this is it. The whole conversation isn't actually about Everton. It isn't actually about Burnley. And that's weird to say. It's all about whether or not Leeds can go and win at Brentford. Sorry.
I was going to say that. I mean, obviously, we don't know what happened, but yeah, it looks to me that I feel that even if Everton did lose against Palace and then lost against Arsenal, they might even still survive because of Leeds's inability to get the necessary points that they need.
That'd be very disappointing, Paul.
it's the thing I'm having to steel myself against that. That's where I think we are.
It just feels that way. It just feels it's all about Leeds and can Leeds win at Brentford, and that even might not be enough, you know.
It's Grace. The Leeds thing's very, very strange. It felt sort of 4 weeks ago as though they were in a position where they would have done enough. The fixture list always looked, it had a sting in the tail. There was a game against Manchester City. There was a game against Arsenal and Chelsea. It did have a sting in the tail. But my God, they haven't helped themselves. They're in bits against City. Lads sent off against Arsenal. Lads sent off against Chelsea. They're not great against Brighton there in that one. They just look like there's been a bit of a collapse when it had looked like it had been steadied.
Some of the tackles as well were absolutely horrendous, kind of just starting the game.
Oh, yeah.
For me, like, when, obviously, Bielsa left, like, he played the same style of football. He was never willing to change. He was quite a negative manager. You didn't really see them improving. And then, obviously, they got Jesse Marsh in. And to start with, I thought, oh, he's doing a great job here. Like, they seem to really like him. And then all of a sudden, they've just been awful. I don't think they've got it in them to beat Brentford. I don't think they have. Thomas Frank seems to have this ability of being able to rally his team. And they've come into this league, they've given everything they've got, and they've done well. And to be fair, if they'd have said to him, oh, you finish him, where are Brentford's 11th or something around there? This season, I think he'd have took it. Leeds have got it in them to beat them. I just don't. I see it being one. Even if they scored first, I don't think they'd have it in them to win.
Well, this is the core thing, Kev, is Leeds. And, you know, we all know what's at stake here. But Leeds United, maybe, just maybe, they get Bamford back on the pitch. One last game. plays under, you know, any circumstances, just get him on the pitch because they need him, or maybe they just need the option of him. But I think if it's one of them, when if he's on the bench, you just start him because Christ, what are you saving it for?
What are you waiting for?
Yeah, so you just lash him on in there. There's been
even
bits.
Then though, I don't think that's the answer.
Joe Gellert.
You can't rely on one person. You can
rely on Joe Gellert. He's fucking unbelievable, isn't
he? I think so. He's really bright. But Bamford's so important for him, the way he runs channels. He occupies people. I think the big problem they've had is that last season they were able to pin teams back. This season, they're not. Like, sides just sort of go, you think you're pinning us back? Oh, you watch. We're going to just take it off your ear and go ping, ping, ping. And we now live in your final third. And finally, you'll make a mistake. But they might have Liam Cooper back for it. They'll have Phillips back if they have Bamford back. It's as much the idea that everyone in that squad, that dressing room, and they can play two up front. They could play Gellert and Bamford together, that everyone looks around and goes, the boys are in town. I think that's what they need more than anything else. They need to look around that dressing room before it kicks off and goes, the boys are on the pitch.
If there's a club in the world that you'd be able to garner that spirit, even with probably an American manager who they're all looking at thinking, why don't you just fuck off? Because he might be a good manager, him, but it's absolutely suicidal, in my opinion, to bring him in the middle of a relegation battle. He's, in fact, not might be a good manager, he clearly is a good manager. But he wasn't the right appointment there. I don't think Keeping Bielsa was either, by the way.
It was one where if you wanted to do someone to keep you up and then do Marsh in the summer, give him pre-season, let him implement his methods, his ideas, this is the way we do it now.
Get someone just who's going to just have them eating fucking earthworms, chewing gravel and just kicking fuck out of people. Whereas he's someone managed to get all of the worst bits of that and none of the bonus side of it, which is crazy. But the one, so obviously, this is the game that lives in my thoughts more than any other, including ours and including City's, because on this game builds my season and seeing if them fuckers can go down. So I've gone through every range of emotions with it. And I listened to is it Billy, the lad off Besotted?
Yeah.
What a lovely fella he is. And then when he starts telling me how much they hate Leeds, I thought, why don't you just fuck off? So how have we got to a situation where we need Leeds to beat Brentford for Everton to go down, fingers crossed? And it turns out that Leeds, someone managed to work, they've manufactured some sort of mad like thing where Brentford hate them. But then, because I'm, again, a football romantic, I've turned it round. So I'm thinking the Leeds players might be thinking, well, fuck you, Brentford, because as Billy said, they've had a few good results against them. Neil Maupay's been giving it to the crowd and all that. So if you can feel, that might be the type of stuff Jesse Marsh gets in on.
But this is why you need the boys. That's my point. Yeah. The lads who've been there, so it is a real, like, I don't care about Daniel James, but it would be nice if they had Luke Ayling. But if they can get Cooper on the pitch, if they can get the click on the pitch, you get Phillips on the pitch, you get Rafinha on the pitch, Harrison on the pitch,
There's enough players there where you go, fucking hell, there's a goal.
They're all right. Yeah.
There's a if they can do that, and if enough of them can say, even like Luke Ayling says, listen, boys, I'm really sorry, but listen, we fucking hate Brentford. So we don't want to go down. That's our first thing. But also,
We don't go down here.
Yeah, we don't go down here. And that Neil Maupay,
well, he doesn't play for them anymore. He's a bright now. Don't worry at all.
Well, we're getting revenge for all the shit that he put us through then. But as long as they've been spoken about all the time, haven't they, as this group of Championship players that Bielsa made more than the sum of the parts and keeping them in the Premier League. And there's enough Championship players in there, hopefully still, where they can sort of say, OK, well, let the manager have his say. And then, boys, listen, let's all get in and have a little team meeting here. And we cannot do this to our fans. And we definitely can't do it to them while they're in this ground where it's going to be twice as bad for them. So let's just fucking do the business.
Burnley, I've got two to play. They've got Villa and they've got Newcastle. Paul, it feels like it was a little bit chastening for them when they played Villa last time out. It was only 1-0 against Spurs and they actually play all right, I thought, over the course of the game. But you feel like they can't let themselves be. It's only two games ago, the Villa result. Whatever happens against Villa in the game that takes place this evening, they can't let themselves be disheartened by it, I think, massively for Burnley. That they're still going to go into the final day in a situation where a home draw will be enough. And I think it's not ideal. It's fair to say it's not an ideal situation. It's not the one you want. You want to be safe at that point. And if you're Burnley, you want to be safe at that point. But a home draw could well be enough if Brentford do beat Leeds from their point of view. But they'd love to get some clear blue water between them and Leeds, and ideally Everton ASAP.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that going back to the Spurs game, the way they played, I think they set up differently to the way they were set up in the last two games. I think it was almost like they didn't want to get any sort of slapping, or they were set up to just almost like take a point.
The new goal difference was the thing.
Yeah. So they just thought, we'll take a point and we'll you know. And they came out of the show a bit in the second half and started to play a bit, but they still didn't have any end product. But I think that, is it Weghorst? I think starting him alongside Cornet would be better than maybe Ashley Barnes, because the Ashley Barnes, although he hit the post, he wasn't as mobile and didn't sort of have those didn't have the same sort of understanding as Cornet and Weghorst. So they're going to need to score. They've looked a bit shot shy, haven't they, Burnley lately? As well as they've got results, not really scoring goals, are they? And they are playing two teams, dare I say it, in Villa and Newcastle. That, but we saw with Newcastle against Arsenal the way they turned up. You know, if they turn up the same against Burnley, they're going to be in trouble. But it all goes back, you know, I think it's immaterial about what happens with Burnley and Everton. I think Leeds is the issue here.
Yeah. The Blues, Crystal Palace tonight, and then Arsenal on Sunday. Arsenal feels like one, Grace, where they can take the what we did at Anfield blueprint into that game against Arsenal and have the philosophy possibly, well, Arsenal aren't as good as Liverpool. So if you can do that at Anfield for 45, you can maybe do it at Arsenal for 90. That's what I'm expecting from Everton if they go into it still needing something, you know, which is very possible, and taking a bit of the gamble as to what's going to happen with Leeds as well. They need to go into it. I think they'll go into it with that being the attitude. I just think there's every chance, you know, when you do that sort of thing, everyone's got to be on it. One little mistake, you get punished for it. And deflection comes against you, you get punished for it. Refereeing decision, you get punished for it. There's loads of ways in which if you do that, you can be punished for it. But I do think that's the way they'll approach the game against Arsenal.
Yeah, when they come to Anfield, it was very much a case of like, we can't compete with you attacking wise, so we're just going to stop you from scoring. And I think that's probably what they'll do against Arsenal. But I still think Arsenal beat them 100%. I just think they want to stay up, yeah, and they're trying to throw everything at it. Like, mentality-wise, they're like, we want to stay up. All the blue flares are just pathetic, in my opinion, but whatever.
I think the sound, you know.
Blue flares, just to stay up, though.
Just to stay up. I'd throw you in the maze. You're like, now I'm watching the round. If Liverpool were on the verge of getting relegated. Grace, I really like you. You're a lovely person. But honestly, I'd throw my fucking firstborn in after you as well, if that's what it took. I think with Everton, listen, everybody knows my feelings on them. You cannot take away from what they've done as a fan base, and I just hope that they can't carry it through, because I hate the thought of them having a good time at the match. Do you know what I mean? I do. I hate the fact that they realised that they can have a positive effect on the outcome of a game by being what they used to call cop-eye behaviour. I don't think you'll ever hear that shout again now, because what they're doing is exactly what we've been doing for years, but it's working. And the mad thing is, most of them have wanted to do that for ages. It's as you said on the show the other day, it's the Everton Dars who've been saying, fuck off, cop-eye behaviour. Everton lads our age and younger just think, do us a favour and fuck off, you boring bastard. I wasn't at Bayern Munich at home, and I'm never going to get at Bayern Munich at home with the way we're going at the moment. So I think, listen, I hate to give them any credit, but you can't argue with the results that they've got from doing what they've done, and the fact that they're really enjoying themselves. The videos of them at Leicester the other week after a match was fucking class. Like, I can appreciate that as a football fan. It was absolutely brilliant. That being said, obviously this will come out after the game, but I don't think they'll beat Crystal Palace. But madly, I've got the worry that I think they'll beat Arsenal.
Do you?
Yeah, I just think Arsenal are just, they're so fucking flaky. Well, if Everton turn take on them and just start, like, not in the Leeds way of just like kicking fuck out of people, but just like giving it to them and unrelenting, they're just thinking, what am I doing here?
Well, certainly the Arsenal thing with Everton that I think is difficult is, what does it all look like if Tottenham go 3-0 up?
Yeah,
at half an hour at Carrow Road, and Everton are just being horrible, and it's like not being horrible, because I don't think they would kick them in the Leeds way. I think what they do at Anfield is they just do everything they can to stop football from occurring. Yeah. So they're just stopping football from occurring. The crowd are livid with everything that's gone on, the fact that they get the result they get, and you, do you know, there's loads of ways in which
that only worked at Anfield because they were happy with a point. There's a world where a point's good enough, actually, isn't it? So
no, point's not good enough. If Burnley get a bit of a result, a point isn't good enough now.
So that's the other thing that could come into play, because
if there's a flip side of that, which is that Everton find out Leeds are 2-0 up.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? All of these things are all in there, and that's what's all different things, at that end of the table, in a strange way.
All these things just make you think, don't they, at Arsenal, after having a great, like, if they'd have had this little poor run of results that they've had since they were 6 points ahead of you, Paul, if they'd have been miles off and then made a late surge and not quite made it, I think they'd have been sound. Do you know what I mean? They'd have been like, well, we were a season ahead anyway if we'd have gotten there. But as it is, at the end of the season, some of them players must just be thinking, like Nketiah, he's thinking, well, I'm not even sure if they still want me here or what. There's a lot of ways where I can just see Arsenal just absolutely capitulating in front of Everton, and if they do, I'll never forgive them.
I think the only thing I would say is that Everton are pretty decimated by injuries and suspensions at the back. I don't even know who they're going to play. Might have to play John Joe Kenny or Seamus Coleman as a centre-back. I think Mason Holgate might be that only fit centre-back. So that's obviously not
makes it harder to do the backs of the wall stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And Palace aren't the sort of team. I know we don't know what happened, but they're not the sort of team you want to be playing with a defence like that with their mobile players up front.
Very fair. Who's going down, Paul?
Leeds.
Grace.
I think Leeds are as well.
Everton.
Tell you what, you are a football optimist like nothing on
football
earth.
Football romantic.
The idea of, I just want to be crystal clear, listeners, the idea that if Liverpool win, if Kev Walsh's predictions on this show come to pass, then I'll make a completely separate prediction, which is that no one is seeing Kev Walsh in one location, including his whole family, for more than 20 minutes until the Champions League final in Paris.
I said to my bird the other day, if we win the league on Sunday, and I didn't even mention the Everton going down thing, but I will actually mention it to her. Do not expect to see me this side of Paris. It's not happening.
There we go. Predictions galore. It's been the Friday show. It's been the Friday show all season. Listen, we'll do stuff over the summer, looking back, getting people on, getting people like Paul back in with Chris Barber, Jim Johnson, etc., having a little sum up stuff over how the whole season went. We will do all of that, but the Friday show week by week. Thank you very much for listening and enjoying. It's always a pleasure on this. Thank you very much to Jordan and John for having their conversation. David Mooney, who's been excellent throughout, and, well, it's not like Jordan hasn't been as well. Actually, Jordan's been excellent throughout as well. And Grace, Kev, and Paul Dehaene. All here, all in the house, all enjoying it every single week. It's been an absolute pleasure. See you later.